be on a stage like this, and really responded well to the challenge of taking all this in, because it's new for us and it's uncharted for most of our players. You've heard me say this before, but we have four players on our team that had ever participated in a bowl game before this year's Fiesta Bowl. So, you know, bowl prep, playing in big games like this, is new for many of our guys. Not necessarily new for TCU, but certainly for the players on our team. So I'm really proud of the way they've handled everything. I think that they are have exceeded expectations in terms of their ability to focus on what's important and not get distracted. There's so many opportunities to do that, obviously, with all the things that are going on, especially being here in Los Angeles. So it's been a heck of a journey for these players. I've been really proud of the way they've handled everything. It's a humble group. They know how blessed they are to get a chance to go to TCU and to play football at TCU and represent the Big 12 here in the national championship game. So it'll be a big challenge for us. We know that. Obviously, Georgia's a team that's very, very talented. The thing that I've found most impressive about them, however, is how well coached they are. Kirby and his staff do an excellent job, really, in all three phases of the game. They play hard regardless of the score. And, again, I think that's a big credit to their culture they have in their program and Coach Smart and his staff. You know, I just have a ton of respect for their football program and the way they do things. So we're looking forward to Monday night. I know it's going to be a big challenge for us, but our guys have never backed down for challenges, and they have a lot of confidence in themselves and our program and what we're trying to do. And we'll go out and play good football Monday night and see what happens.
Coach Smart?
Yeah, a lot of the same sentiments as Coach Dykes. Tremendous honor to be here. You know, 130-something teams start out trying to achieve this, and there's two left. And I think it speaks volumes to the character of both teams, the way each team has been able to win football games. I think so much is overrated about talent and what so many people put into the game of football. When a team cares about each other and they have a lot of intangibles and really good players at the right positions, it makes for a special group. And hearing the story of TCU's season, getting to see Coach Dykes at the Heisman, Max, I mean, when you start looking across the board, it's a hell of a story for these two teams to be playing each other. And it's an honor for us to be here. I'd like to say thanks to the CFP committee and the CFP group that's hosted us. What a tremendous job they've done in L.A. to host our players. I know over at our hotel, our players have enjoyed the hospitality room. They've had an opportunity to be together. And, you know, we have the fortune of having a lot of guys last year that left for the NFL. But every one of those guys that left for the NFL tell our players, you better enjoy this moment because it's different at the next level, and these guys have a special bond that they get to spend together. There's countless hours and minutes that these teams, both of us, have spent preparing. It's a long process to get to the semifinal in terms of 28 or however many days, and then you got another 10, and you end up spending a lot of time together through Christmas and through New Year's and through travel. And our guys have really enjoyed that. I've enjoyed it. It's why we get in this business. And what a great stage we get to play on Monday night. Just honored to be here and represent the University of Georgia.
We'll open up for Q&A. Start over here on our right in the second row.
Stand up so you can see me. Good morning, guys. Kirby for you. Ralph Russo from the Associated Press over here on this side. Kirby. What is needed to maintain excellence? Your former boss has been in this similar situation, sitting up where you are now, and has had to explain it. I'm wondering if you could explain what is needed to maintain excellence like your program has over the last couple of years.
A lot of hard work, standard, belief in the culture within it. You know, it doesn't start when the season starts. It starts Tuesday when the season ends. And it just continues. I mean, I don't know that you can relax and just say, okay, we're going to be fine. You have to make it happen. And I think each and every year you have a different team. Obviously, recruiting plays a part of that, because if you don't have good players, you got no chance. But a big part of that is the organization that I've been given the ability to hire at the University of Georgia. They are second to none at my administration of supporting us, bringing in analysts, bringing in coaches, having nice facilities. I mean, you need those things to be successful and sustain. But at the end of the day, you better have buy-in with your players. And I think the older I've gotten, the more I acknowledge the relationship with the player matters much more than maybe the play you call, than maybe the practice habit you create or anything else. It's will those players play hard for each other? And do they believe in their coaching staff, that their coaching staff cares for them? And that allows you to sustain.
We're going to move over here to our left front row.
Yeah, Brooks also with Dogs Daily. Coach Smart, what kind of challenges specifically does the 3-3 stack present? And conversely, Coach Dykes, the 12 personnel that Georgia stays in and offensively or kind of has offensively, what kind of challenges does that present?
Yeah, Coach Gillespie does a hell of a job. I mean, it amazes me the job he does consistently, even from Tulsa, because, like I've talked about, we played Cincinnati in a couple years ago, and Tulsa by far and away did the best job against Cincinnati, and we became enamored in that when he was doing it then. And it allows you to have more depth in your defense. It allows you when you play spread teams, you have more speed on the field. There's different layers to it, more layers to it. They do a tremendous job. And take all the scheme part out. It's how you play and strike people. When you watch them strike blocks with hat and hands and the speed with which they play downhill and just strike people, it's a beauty. It's a thing of beauty to myself because I enjoy watching really good defense. And they play it. And it's very unique. So when you go to prepare for it, it's not as easy. It's different. Now, you could make a case in their league, they may see some defenses like that, but I think there's the thing that everybody's like, well, everybody plays that defense in their league. They're not all the same. They're not all the same. And when you play another team in another conference, you get to see their conference and see the defenses, and people would say, well, everybody runs that in that league. That's not really true. This is probably the most unique and, in my opinion, played the best of all those defenses in the conference.
Yeah, I think it was the second part of the thing for me asking about 12 personnel. excuse me. You know what's interesting about 12 personnel? A lot of people run 12 personnel, and so what you do is, and this is something that, you know, it's something that we've done in the past. You know, I was a Mike Leach disciple, kind of a 10 personnel guy. That was a thing that Mike did different, was to Cal's offense. It was a lot of 20s and 21 personnel groupings and made it basically a 10 personnel offense, and, you know, started to play with tempo and all the things that kind of made Mike's version of the air raid different and unique. As a young coach, I took a coordinator job at the University of Arizona and, you know, had a tight end named Rob Gronkowski that was a pretty good player. And so, you know, it was like, okay, I've never played with a tight end. I don't even really know what a tight end looks like. And this is what he looks like. And so let's figure out a way to get this guy the ball. And so, you know, all of a sudden it was, we're lining up in 11 personnel and some 12. And the thing that's different about it is, you know, you've got to play 8 gaps. You know, your run fits are much more complex. How you're going to get to them is much more difficult. You know, now from a run game perspective, you've got to cover all of these gaps that you don't necessarily have to cover, you know, without the 12 personnel. And so it just changes the way you approach the game defensively. Most people, when they go 12, they're taking 2 good players off the field and putting 2 average players on the field. Well, Georgia is certainly the exception to that. I mean, their tight ends are exceptional. And they are wide receivers. They're like Rob. I mean, they're wide receivers that are 270 pounds and can block. And the thing that's unique about those two tight ends is they like to block. You know, they're physical-minded guys. They're very skilled receivers, but they play a tough brand of football. And that's what makes Georgia's 12 different than everybody else's. As I said earlier, most guys are taking out a good player and putting in some average at best player, because they want to, change the run fits or make it a little bit more difficult for a defense to prepare for. These guys are doing it with, arguably two of the best tight ends in college football and some really exceptional athletes. And again, the thing that stands out about them is their toughness and their willingness to go in there and mix it up and their effectiveness as blockers.
Take our next question right over here to our right in the very front row.
Kirby, Lance McCurley, Lake Oconee News. We get to see Javon on the field and on the sidelines, kind of a charismatic guy, kind of a leader. But what is he kind of like behind the scenes, and how have you seen him grow in the last couple of years?
You say Javon? Yeah, just a great kid. He loves football. When you start combing our state, I wouldn't say there's kids as talented as Javon everywhere, but there's a lot of kids in our state that just love football. And that's what we found during the COVID year. He never got to come to campus. He never got to come to camp. But he sent in at least 100 videotapes of him working out in his backyard and putting out cones. And I said, man, this guy's different. These kids aren't doing this in COVID times where they're going out to work out and making sure they get seen. And we just kind of fell in love with the culture and the toughness of the kid. And he's become he makes our team tougher. He's had injury after injury. He's had some shoulders, and he won't put on a black shirt. He creates a dynamic on our team of if you think you're hurt, look at Javon. He'll go out there and practice every day, and he'll have contact and play with toughness. I think in this day and age, that's different in football, and it creates a little bit of an attitude for our team that makes us better. It permeates the special teams, and even receivers see it, and they're like, man, if he can go, then I can go. So I think that's the biggest thing he brings to our team.
We're going to go right here in the middle in the second row, please.
Good morning, gentlemen. Tony Reese, WCBM out of Columbus, Georgia. Addressing injuries going into tomorrow's game, what's the latest update on Darnell Washington, Coach Smart, and Kendre Miller, Coach Sykes?
Yeah, we're hopeful we can get Darnell ready to play. He's continued to work really hard, done a lot of rehab, and I know he really wants to. This is his first chance to play on the West Coast, and he's from, Vegas, and this game means a lot to him, and I know it's an important one to him.
Yeah, and Kendre, we'll have a run-through today that's our typical Friday run through day before the game, full speed run through. So we'll get a really good sense of what he can and can't do today. And, then make a decision, going into tomorrow. So running backs are different. When you talk about a running back and you're talking about a thigh bruise or a sprained shoulder or a contusion someplace, those are things that running backs can typically play through. When you start talking about, a knee and a sprained knee and the things that go along with that potentially, then you've got to be very, very careful. And obviously, Kendre is going to want to play. It's a big stage. He's a tough kid. But he's a young man, and our job is to take care of him and make sure that we don't just see Monday night, that we see the big picture as far as taking care of Kendre's health and doing the right thing for him. Again, not just for Monday, but for, his immediate future. So we'll take it all in today, see where he's at, and then make a decision.
We're going to go to our far left in the third row.
Questions for both coaches, Newey Scruggs, NBC 5 Dallas. For you, Coach Smart, I know you talked about not feeling like you were the hunted, but the pressure of being installed as the favorite and being the number one team in the country to face this group of guys that were unranked all year. And then for you, Coach Dykes, can you speak to the fact of TCU's becoming a national brand? Earlier this week on TNT, Ernie Johnson, who's a Georgia grad, bet Shaq that Georgia would win by 28. And Shaq, who now lives in Texas, said he'd eat a horned frog if it happened here. But that here's a NBA show talking about TCU football.
I'm not sure I understand the question exactly. In regards to the hunted or being hunted, I promise you, there's no greater pressure on any sport than there is on college athletics, especially for major college football programs. And I don't think Coach Dykes or myself would be in this business if we weren't used to pressure. And I don't, you know, I look at it in a vacuum. I don't get to watch much TV. I don't get to do much social media. I just worry about our team and don't get caught up in anything outside of that. And we've had a saying around our place for a long time that probability is not reality. So we don't control what people say in probability. Reality is what happens on the field between those lines. And that's what takes a lot more courage than just putting out probability.
Yeah, and I'll say this. You look around college athletics and you look at the NCAA basketball tournament and you see teams that you don't expect to be there end up in the top eight or the final four. That seems to be something that's almost an annual occurrence these days. College football is different. It just is. You know, there's a lot of plays that go into that game. There's a lot of players, you know, instead of five guys and one or two guys get really hot, you know, you've got to have an entire team do it and execute at a high level. And so I do think it's more difficult to kind of emerge from the shadows in football than it is maybe in basketball. Our group has had a little bit of a magical ride, you know, and I think the biggest difference is that it's our first year. We were still trying to get to know the guys. We're still trying to get, you know, a culture established. You know, I just think that at the end of the day, that's the most important thing. Is what is your culture? Because it drives the decision a player makes from the time they wake up in the morning to the time they go to bed. You know, what is their level of commitment? What's their level of responsibility to their teammates? How deeply are they truly invested in the team? And so there's all these things that sometimes take time. To our players' credit, for whatever reason, it didn't take as long this time as it usually does. Our guys were hungry and they were mature. They had a chip on their shoulder, and they bought in quickly. Now, the challenging thing as we move forward, you know, past Monday, is, you know, where do we go from here? And you know, there's a standard now that and a set of expectations that accompany this kind of success. And, you know, to me, that's the exciting part. It really is. I mean, that's, you really get to find out how good you are. It's one thing to kind of get to the top. It's another thing to be able to stay there. And again, that's why I have so much respect for Coach Smart and his staff and the Georgia program, because that's a hard thing to do. It's very, very difficult to do. And it takes a lot of factors and a lot of people and a lot of commitment to be able to do that on a consistent basis. So, you know, we're looking forward to that challenge. You know, there's some doors open to us now because of this success that have been closed for a long time. And it's up to us to figure out how to reap the benefits from when it comes to recruiting, the opportunity to recruit a different kind of player, when it comes to the opportunity to you know, have access to staff members and additional staff and, you know, just all the things that can help you take the next step as a program. So, you know, it's been a journey to get here, but we're excited about not only Monday night, but where do we go from here, and how can we continue to build our brand from a national standpoint? You know, and I think the second part of the question, look, I've always been a Shaq guy. You know, I mean, that's told the story before. My wife and I have been married 17 years now. We've had three disagreements in our marriage in 17 years, and one of them was about Shaq and Kobe. You know, I'm a Shaq guy, she's a Kobe girl. That was probably about as eventful argument as we've had in our marriage. And so, hey, look, I'm a Shaq dude through and through. Always have been. So he's a Texas guy, San Antonio Cole.
On that note, we'll move right over here to the middle in the second row.
That's more information than you wanted. Hey, but it's the truth.
I'm more impressed you've only had three arguments with your wife in 17 years. I'm still trying to conquer that.
Sonny, you just made Sports Center, but Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, for both coaches. Kirby, I think you're still on the rules committee. I wonder what both of you thought of the concept of limiting what are now being called exposures, not plays, but exposures for or against. What are the advantages or disadvantages of that?
You're talking about a total number of plays in game exposures you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the first things you look at on the rules committee, and they bring it up every year, is the length of games. I think there can be two things there. You're talking about TV viewership, and you're also talking about exposures to contact in terms of number of plays. There's a lot of ways to manipulate the number of plays, including the clock. And, you know, our big brother in this world of football is the NFL. And so much of what we do is modeled off what they do. They spend a lot of money on trying to get it right. And, you know, they've shrunk their game into a time frame that's probably a little bit tighter window than ours, and also trying to limit exposures as well, although they have a longer season and they've added games to their season. So when you look at all that, it comes as a big decision. We are dealing with student athletes, and I think it starts with that. I wouldn't sit up here and say I'm in favor of shrinking the game. I do think our game has gotten long, and there are a lot of plays. Because in college football, there's a lot more teams that use tempo, therefore they want more snaps than you see in the NFL. That's not prevalent in the NFL. It's a different game when it comes to that. So it's probably boils down to what's safest for our players without changing our game, because our college football game is different than the NFL, and we don't have to mimic that, although we want to make it safe as possible for our players.
Yeah, look, we're getting ready to play our 15th ball game. You know, I think this is 22 consecutive weeks that our players have been practicing, so it's been a grind. It's a long process. You know, there's lots of factors to consider, not only physical health but mental health as well, when it comes to that type of grind with 18 to 22 year old kids and the emotional toll and mental health toll that it can take on them. So I think we've got to consider everything, and as the games. The number of plays in games increase and the number of games increase, then, you know, we have to say, okay, look, that's the way this is played. Now let's make adjustments in practice. Let's cut down the number of exposures that we are, you know, that we have on a daily basis in practice. And so it's like anything else. I mean, there's a set of rules. We have to figure out how to best take care of our players and put a quality product on the field within the set of rules. I do think that needs to be something that is a constant conversation about, okay, how can we take care of our guys, again, not only physically but mentally? Because there is, you know, look, these guys are, you know, preparing to take big ball games, but they're also preparing to take final exams, you know, and they're also dealing with issues off the field with family and friends and all the different things that these young men are exposed to on a daily basis. And so it can be a very complicated thing, and, you know, we've got to do the very best that we can to look after not only our players mentally but also physically and their mental health, because that's the most important thing at the end of the day.
We're going to move over here right on our right in the front.
Good morning, coaches. DJ Jones, Sports Visions USA, Columbus, Georgia. This question is for both of you. Obviously, the mission is to compete for a national championship, but can you explain how the practice time and this time of year is so important to the development and maturity of your younger players?
Well, I'll start. I mean, it's obviously been a big thing for us. Again, we've had, you know, lots of practice opportunities. We've had, you know, an additional 15 leading into the semifinal game that our players haven't had in the past. So you think about it. You know, if you're a senior team and, you know, if you're a senior player and you've been in a program that has consistently been to bowl games, and particularly New Year's Day bowl games or bowl games that occur later during the bowl game cycle, you know, you look up and you go, okay, it's 15 practices for 4 years. That's 60 practices. Okay. Well, that's 4 years of an additional spring training. And that's a big deal. That's a really big deal. And that goes back to what I talked about earlier in our program. We have four guys leading into this year that have participated in a bowl game. And so, you know, we're a little behind in terms of our development and trying to catch up to some of the folks in front of us because we just haven't had that many practice opportunities. So what we've had to do is maximize them, you know, and again, to our players' credit, they show up every day with a willingness to go to work, and it makes a difference. And we tried to sit down and say, okay, look, we were fortunate enough to get in the Big 12 championship game, which was an extra five practices. We're fortunate enough to get in the college football playoff, which is an extra 15 practices. We're fortunate enough to get into the national championship game now, which is an extra 5 practices. All those things add up. And so we sat down and we said, okay, what do we want to accomplish by this? Number one, win the last game. That was our goal. And number two, develop our team and including our young players. And so it's been a great opportunity for some of our young players that have been on scout team that haven't had a chance really to get developed that much, to get developed. And so we go back and we check our work all the time. We have objectives that we want to accomplish, and then we go back and say, are we really doing this? Are we really giving those young guys an opportunity to shine and develop and compete and become the kind of players we want them to become? You know, and we're making sure that that's the case. And so far, I think that's happened. And I can't help but carry over, I think. You know, we'll find out.
Yeah, a lot of the same. I said this yesterday at Media Day, and I hate to repeat myself, but I really think a lot of the reason we were able to turn our roster over from last year to this year was the practices and preparation we had at this time of year. As we were finishing the year last year, we were getting really high-quality work out of about, I would say, 7 or 8 kids starting for us right now in the game. Tomorrow night we're scout team players or twos, and the way we do our reps as the year goes, our twos get a little more volume and our ones get a little less, knowing that the twos need the work and might be up for call as you have injuries. So the guys that are playing now that were twos last year, in some cases threes, they got a lot of work, and I think Coach Dykes is right, that cumulative effect. I've always said the states that have spring practices, their kids leave high school football 1 year ahead of states that don't because they've had 4 spring practices from 9th grade to 12th grade. And our kids have had a lot of practices. The counter thought to that is how much we do practice. We have a lot, and we target a lot of days for our kids to, you know, the ones go condition and the twos and threes go get opportunity, and they literally go against each other and just play football. And I think that does help in terms of getting your team prepared. I also think when the portal age, when kids feel like they don't have a role, they're quicker to leave, and we're really selling the development. We're going to show Jordan Davis from his freshman and sophomore year down there working on the scout team and say, hey, look what this guy, where he was, and look what he became doing it this way. And selling that within your program becomes a selling point to them to stick and stay and truly develop and grow in the organization.
We're going to take our next question over here on our right, about 4 rows back.
David Ubbin with The Athletic. For you guys, how do you feel about the current college football calendar with regards to recruiting and transfers and signings, and what changes, if any, would you like to see?
Kirby left this one for me to answer first. yeah, I mean, look, the calendar is the calendar. It's a strange thing that we've had a calendar that we followed a long time that made a lot of sense, you know, because the players signed in February and they made their decisions when they took visits in October, November, December. You know, and that's not the case anymore. It's different. And so what we've done is we've made revisions through the thing that have made sense at the time. But we've kind of ended up with a little bit of a hodgepodge of stuff. And so, you know, everybody has their feelings on what they want. You talk to 10 different coaches, you get 10 different opinions. The one thing I think that we have to do in this profession is, as Kirby alluded to earlier, I mean, this is a ultra, ultra competitive, high accountability profession. And we're all incredibly driven. And I think that what we have to do is protect ourselves from ourselves as coaches. You know, we have to legislate time off, you know, because not only does young people have mental health. We have mental health as well. I mean, this, you know, this deal is a grind, and you've got to take care of your coaches, and you got to take care of your staff, and you got to take care of yourself. And the only way that you can do that is by legislating time off. Because if we have a day, and Kirby's the same way, I'm sure, I know he is. If we have an opportunity to recruit a player, by God, we're going to recruit him. We're going to have him on our campus, or we're going to be in a high school, or we're going to be on the phone, or we're going to do something to try to secure that recruiting commitment. And so it's a complicated issue. We could sit here and talk about it for hours, but I think at the end of the day, that's, to me, that's the most important thing is, you know, legislating time off. I have a 14-year-old, an 11-year-old daughter, and a 6-year-old son, and I want to be able to see them and be part of their life and have a chance to spend time with them. And it's very difficult if we don't have some kind of legislated time off where we get away, where we focus not only on our players and our program, but our families and, you know, doing our job as a father and as a husband and in that capacity as well. So it's complicated. There's work that needs to be done. I think the good thing about the NCAA now is we're trying to do things. You know, there is more of a let's try to do something as opposed to let's ignore this problem. And I think some of the issues that we're having in college football now were because for years and years and years, we stuck our head in the sand and didn't address issues that involved our student athletes. And now, thankfully, we've been forced to address those issues. And I think it's led to some great opportunities for our student athletes as a result.
It's a tough balance. Mm-hmm. I concur with a lot of things that Gostak just said. I mean, it's not the profession that I originally got into in terms of relationships and coaching. It's changed so much. Now, you know, my position has changed as well from when I first got into it, but it's become a much tougher profession to navigate in terms of your own family and your time constraints on that, especially if you want to try to stay at the highest level and what it requires to do. And I think the NCAA and the minds that help put all the information together, including ourselves as coaches, we're all to blame for kind of eating our own. And it's like a cannibalizing because you won't stop. And it just keeps going. And I think with the playoff system coming up, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Are you going to be playing games while you're trying to sign guys in early signing period in December? It's gotten more competitive than ever. I mean, you're already looking at junior days 6-7 days from right now, and we're trying to play in a national championship. So it doesn't stop for the coaches at the highest level. And I'm not sure that any of us have the exact right answer, but I do think being smart and legislating time for coaches to be with their team and with their families is important. The flip side of that is the prospects want their opportunities to make a good decision, and the time that's very demanding is tough. It's tough to make those decisions.
And I want to add just one thing to that. I mean, look, you know, we were preparing this week for a national championship game, and we had 6 transfers on campus on an official visit. And you're just kind of like, really? I mean, are we really doing this? And so that's just the way it is now. And you know, those days were going to be 18-hour days before, and the 18-hour days turned into 20-hour days. And that's the nature of our business. Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining. I have the opportunity to do something else if I want to. But it's, you know, we do have to, at some point, kind of sit down and say, okay, look, here's the calendar. What can we do to serve the players first and foremost, and second of all, try to retain some kind of ability to be a good father and a good husband?
Gentlemen, thank you very much. We're going to ask if you would please transition to standing on either side of the trophy so that we can go ahead and take a couple